This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. And this is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9, and we're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So, welcome to the show. Would our guests like to introduce themselves?
Thank you. My name's Joan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Joan, welcome to the show. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? How old are you?
I'm age 68.
Wonderful. And how long have you been sober?
Coming on, I'll be 2 years on August the 29th.
Wonderful. And family?
I've got one daughter and two grandchildren.
Wonderful, wonderful. And do you work?
No, I'm retired now.
That's lovely. Whereabouts are you from? Are you from Christchurch?
Yes, born in Christchurch.
Born in Christchurch. Lived here your whole life?
Yes.
Wonderful.
I have lived in Australia for periods of time.
Right. So tell us about what it was like for you when you started drinking.
I started drinking rather early, I think 17, 16, 17. but it didn't, it wasn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I thought was good. It gave me confidence, and I would try and put it into my life. I think the confidence thing was what I noticed the most.
Sure,
but
sure.
It didn't develop into a dependency for a long, long time after.
So, okay, so, you know, into early adulthood, you know, you didn't identify there were any problems with the way you, or the way that you drank?
No.
What?
No, I was a social drinker.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so it was present in your life. It was around you.
It became a problem when I was in my early 30s.
Oh, okay.
Well, it became problematic, but I probably kept a lid on it. But I was becoming aware that I had a bit of a thinking about it more.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so it was at the forefront of your mind more and more.
Yeah.
So you talk to us more about that, controlling it, keeping a lid on it. What did that look like? What some of the things you had to do?
I realised that I was thinking, when I came home from work, looking forward to opening the fridge, and there was something to drink in the fridge. So I would have a few drinks, but then I'd still prepare the meal and continue on with the evening. And that's how I sort of realised that I was getting something from it. It had a payback for me.
And what the payback. What was that? How did it make you feel?
It relaxed me. It helped me make decisions. For that time, I was a solo mum.
Right.
And so it was serving me quite well then.
Yeah.
I wasn't having serious consequences.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about what it was like when it didn't serve you so well. How did that develop?
Well, it was very slow, really, and I think that was with denial around my drinking as well.
Right.
I had a lot of denial.
Mm-hmm.
I started over drinking at different social events.
Okay.
And if I didn't do that, I would leave early and go home and drink, continue to drink at home where it felt safe to do so. And that sort of thing started to become apparent.
And were there ever any events or consequences that made you think, okay, maybe this isn't okay?
Yes, I had a car accident.
Okay.
Yes, when I was drinking.
Yep.
Yes.
And was that enough? At any point did you try to stop on
your own? No, that wasn't enough. No, that wasn't enough. Because I'd left the car and got a lift and took off. it may have, the thing that did made me a little bit more careful. I'm talking a long time ago there.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So talk us through again how it progressed. How did it progress over the years and how did it change?
Well, it started to interfere with work.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on to part-time work, and I think that was to accommodate my drinking.
And that was your choice to do that?
Yes.
Why? Okay.
Yes.
And so you didn't get into any trouble as such as work? At work, you just adjusted the work hours?
Yes, I adapted my life around it.
Right.
Yeah, around the drinking.
Okay.
That's what the main thing that I did. But I was getting preoccupied.
Mm-hmm.
That was the word I was trying to think of earlier, preoccupied with getting home to start drinking. So it was slowly, becoming in my mind.
Mm.
It was affecting me with my thoughts and mentally, really.
Okay, so at what point did you say, okay, you know, what was it that brought you to your rock bottom, or brought you into, you know, to seek help?
Well, there was a whole lot of events. I started going to private rehabs.
Okay.
In Australia and here.
Okay.
At a at a great cost.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I could remain anonymous mm-hmm. because I was absolutely terrified of the word alcoholic
mm.
and people finding out.
Mm.
And because of the stigma that I felt, and I really built that totally out of proportion,
mm.
I think. I was terrified. And then I became to be a bit more open about it. I came to AA earlier in the piece,
okay.
but I just wasn't ready.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't painful enough or wasn't hurting me enough.
Mm.
Mm.
Okay, and so, okay, so taking us back to these rehabs, you didn't maintain a sobriety of sorts?
I did have 2 years after
sure.
going to Queen Mary yep. and Hamner.
Okay, but what was it that brought you back 2 years ago?
Well, things deteriorated. I started to feel a bit of financial
mm-hmm,
pressure,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't have in the early part of my drinking. There was always money to drink,
mm-hmm.
whether I was working or not. I always had money,
mm-hmm.
so it was the financial. It was not being able to go to work. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I didn't want to go to work,
mm-hmm.
And it's very insidious,
mm-hmm.
and it sort of crept in, and I felt that it almost hoodwinked me
mm.
into thinking that I'm okay, that
mm-hmm.
there's no problem here, mm-hmm. even though I'd been to these rehabs and my daughter, it was affecting the relationship mm. with her.
And so did she, you know, try to offer assistance?
Yes, periodically there'd be support, but she became quite angry mm. about it all.
Mm.
And I can understand that because mm. I can see my part in that.
Mm. Mm. Okay, so what was it that brought you back into recovery? How did you actually get back into the rooms of AA?
Well, I was drinking 20, you know, first thing in the morning, right mm-hmm. through till night, go to sleep, continued drinking, and I just couldn't stop without mm. going in somewhere for a detox.
Okay, okay.
It was impossible, and people were saying, well, you got a choice. But I didn't feel that choice. The only choice I felt was I needed to drink. Because
mm.
that's, you know, it got to the stage where I've heard it said in AA that I couldn't live with it mm. and I couldn't live without it. It
mm-hmm.
was a total dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I was suicidal
mm-hmm.
and things became so bad that after my many, many, many times in a detox, I was able to think, something has to change.
Mm, mm.
So I sort of had that light bulb, I have to change it and only I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a realisation for me.
Mm.
I came back into AA, but I was a lot more open,
okay.
and I knew that people had stayed sober by the program, so perhaps so could I.
Why not me?
Mm.
Absolutely. And so you've been back in the program now for nearly 2 years. What was it like going back into an AA meeting? What were the people like?
Oh, I felt welcoming,
mm-hmm.
and I knew a lot of the people.
Mm.
There's a lot mm. of people I'd met many decades
mm-hmm.
earlier.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of them had stayed sober.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yep. So I suppose I had a little bit of envy around that.
Sure.
Because I started then thinking, well, all this life that I've missed out on.
Mm.
But I learned in AA to let things go
mm-hmm.
and start, you know, doing the living, really.
And what does you know, what does that living look like for you now? What does your recovery entail?
I have a structured life. It's not usually doing, you know, out in the town or anything. I'm just I enjoy my house and my
mm-hmm.
hobbies
mm-hmm.
and which are gardening and knitting and my dog. We
mm-hmm.
we're out walking, we meet other people. And being able to get up in the morning and feel that
mm.
ease and, you know, into the day with a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm getting purpose back in my life.
And this, so having a program around you, what does that look like for you? Is that, you know, regular amount of meetings?
Yes, I try and do. Well, when I first came back into AA, I did what was suggested with the 90 meetings in 90 days.
Okay.
Previous to that, I thought, that's a lot of cob's wash. I'm not doing that. And when I did do it, I could see why it is suggested.
Yeah.
I became, from, you know, started meeting and getting to know people,
mm-hmm.
and learn a bit more, being open to the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm. What about service?
Yes, I have done two service roles. I'm doing one presently. I'm the treasurer of Steps and Traditions,
Wonderful.
Which is on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, I think that's, I can see the why that is helpful.
The value and getting you and the ownership and the accountability.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about AA not being a religious program but being a spiritual program. What does that look like for you?
It is a spiritual program because when I was drinking, I was well aware that my soul was damaged, you know. I didn't have that, my spirit was really getting targeted with alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so when you came back into the rooms and you sort of, you know, what it looked like for you to find a power greater than yourself?
I had always had a higher power in
mm-hmm.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, as I say, it got short-circuited in addiction. But so that part of it for me was quite smooth.
Mm.
Yeah, it mm-hmm. was quite smooth.
Yep.
And at my most sceptical, I actually saw signs of a presence of God in my life.
Mm.
Nothing, you know, and I think that was more spiritual than religious.
For sure. So what are some of the things you do today to help you, cope with periods of difficulty?
I should. I don't always, but I would ring someone
mm-hmm.
that's in the fellowship to mm-hmm. discuss that around those. I haven't really been faced with anything major in the 2 years that I've been sober.
Mm-hmm. Reaching out for help, is that something that's gotten easier?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
And, how would you describe your life today?
Peaceful.
Mm.
I can cope with things without having to pick up that first drink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've got the serenity. I'm a lot better equipped at handling life on life's terms.
Mm. Absolutely. What would you say to anyone, you know, who thinks they might have a drinking problem? What's something they could do or ask themselves?
Well, I knew I had a problem for a long, long time. And I got into hiding that and protecting that.
Mm.
And if you can get past that and know that there are people there that will understand, mm-hmm. and will support, and because I found that I just got the insidious that it just got worse and worse and worse, and I know that for me it never got better.
No.
And it got harder to get out of.
And so reaching out and asking for help.
Yes.
For sure.
Which is hard if you're totally independent. I spend a lot of time trying to think my way out of it. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm intelligent. Why can't I think mm-hmm. of the solution here? But no amount of thinking was going to get me out of that trap that I got into.
Wonderful. Well, Joan, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. It's been lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You have been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.